Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have a very timely show lined up for you. We've invited David Lafferty, who is a chartered financial analyst with, David, let me get you on the line so you can pronounce this correctly. But David is a senior vice president and chief marketing strategist with
Natixis Global Asset Management.
There we go. So U.S. distribution. Okay. Natixis. That's a mouthful. And the website for today's program is Durable Portfolio. And David is a chartered financial analyst, as I said. He's a senior vice president, investment strategies group. His team is responsible for looking at capital market trends, working with their portfolio management teams, and developing innovative product solutions for their company. He's been with his current company since 2004 and has done a lot of work in the, you've done a lot of work in the fixed income and asset allocation product side, right?
Correct.
All right. Very good. Well, we need your sage and I'm sure refined expertise about the markets. You know, there's a lot of talk about, are we in a bubble? Are we at the top? Is this a start of a new American renaissance? Is this, where are we? And we had gotten in touch with David, and so he's going to help us understand some of those things. So let me start with some of the obvious. What are you seeing as some of the trends, David, with from your perspective? And I know you guys do a ton of research and follow these things closely. What is your take on equities, where they are now?
It's a great question. I would say that equities are really in kind of a transition phase. I think investors can get a little confused when they look in the rearview mirror. You know, obviously 2008, we had a major sell-off in the market. Market, you know, in March of 2009 was very, very cheap. Earnings were very, very low. So it's not a surprise that the equity markets really took off from there. We are up on a total return basis. Again, that's price plus the dividends reinvested. We're up at a rate of more than 25% annually for the last 5 years. And that's not a huge surprise given how bad the market had gotten back in 2008 and 2009. But we're really transitioning out of that. We still like equities. They're not expensive, but they're not really cheap anymore. And so the drivers of the equity market are changing a bit more. You're not going to get sort of lots of price appreciation just from earnings multiples rising. That's the price that investors put on stocks. You really need earnings to go up and you need to collect your dividend. And so on a going forward basis, stocks right now on an annual basis are probably growing their earnings at say 5 to maybe 8%, and then you get a dividend of 1 to 2% on top of that. So it's a decent return, but it's certainly not the 20+% that people have gotten used to in the last 4 or 5 years. So we still like stocks, but we don't expect this kind of runaway bull market that we've had last 4 or 5 years.
So it'd be fair to say that prior performance is not indicative of future results?
It would be excellent to say that, and that is almost always the case. I think investors should always remember, that other things being equal, future returns are lower after they've been, up a lot, and future returns tend to be higher after the realized returns have been lower. And so it's a little bit of the inverse of what a lot of investors think.
That's a good point. Well, so it's almost, would it be a fair way of looking and say, look, whatever's happened has happened. Going forward, we really need to look at earnings. Earnings are going to drive the market going forward, because any quote-unquote kind of retracing steps from the market being knocked down so heavily, that's all done. So now it's all about earnings.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, in a technical sense, we often look at earnings, but cash flow, the company's ability to generate revenue and to drive both top line and bottom line, kind of, drive the underlying value of the companies. It's not so much about kind of how the market values them anymore, what we would call the price earnings ratio. So, over long periods of time, the price-earnings ratio of the S&P 500, again, that's large-cap U.S. stocks, has been around 15 to 16 times earnings. Well, today, that's right about where we are.
Okay.
And so that doesn't mean that stocks are expensive, but they're certainly not cheap anymore either. And so I think you're exactly right. Earnings, cash flow, for companies to actually be able to sort of drive return on investment, that's what has to drive the stock market higher from here.
Absolutely. And that's a good way to look at it from a global or from the overall market standpoint. And in terms of individual stocks, not only do you have what you just described in looking at the earnings, but then we have good old-fashioned risk that we have to look at, because that's where the price comes from, right? I mean, you look at what the risk is compared to the overall market or to their competitors. So, you know, I think going forward, it really is what is driving the individual company or the overall market. One thing to get in real quick here, David, is your website, because I've been to it and there's a lot of good information there, durableportfolio.com.
Correct.
All right, good stuff. So, and your thoughts and some of the observations, what are you guys thinking about at your company about America, you know, kind of, you know, looking at just our country, and then we can kind of talk about some other countries around the world. Do you buy into this kind of insourcing American renaissance, the manufacturing sector? Are you seeing signs of some momentum building there?
We do, actually. I think you always have to be careful not to overplay it, because these are fairly well-known trends or well-established trends. We're at the front end of that. But the market oftentimes prices that in. So,
okay.
But I think the underlying trend is definitely there. And I'll just give you a couple of examples. We often, you know, two big ones or maybe three big ones. Automotive manufacturing has come back to the U.S. in a big way. And that's not just U.S. manufacturers. Many of your, what people would refer to as the luxury foreign brands, have built large plants in the U.S., particularly in the South and Southeast. So automotive, we just got, light vehicle sales came out. And so we are producing cars in this country at about a 16 million unit rate annually. That's not exactly the peak, but it's up from about 9 million just a few years ago.
Wow.
During the rough period. So automotive manufacturing in the U.S. has really rallied back. Another trend they often talk about is sort of a manufacturing renaissance, typically in the Midwest. This is really driven for a couple of reasons. That is the labor cost differential between manufacturing in the U.S. and manufacturing in, say, other emerging markets is closing. Everyone was worried for years that, you know, all the manufacturing jobs are going to China and other parts of Asia. That's still certainly a big trend, but as wage growth has sort of skyrocketed in China, that differential is closing. And not only that, but the average American worker, the productivity of the average American worker, helps close that gap even more. And so I wouldn't say it's an enormous driver of U.S. Economic growth at this point, but we are definitely seeing very early signs of manufacturing coming back onshore. And then the third one I think most people have heard about is sort of this energy revolution that the U.S. is going through.
Sure.
Between fracking and natural gas and horizontal drilling. And again, I mentioned earlier, that's one of the ones where it's not as easy to play because the market has kind of already recognized it, but it's certainly bringing employment and growth to a lot of states in the upper Midwest. So, you know, between, you know, the energy revolution, this onshoring of manufacturing, and kind of this automotive resurgence we've seen, there are some real good underlying trends to the U.S. economy.
I'm excited. I think it's great. And although I would not recommend, you know, that somebody go all in, so to speak, in any one area, or even, you know, unless somebody's really on the front end or have a unique situation to go all in on equities, it is exciting and it is, it is encouraging to see this kind of activity. And you mentioned, I want to get to real quick, David, before we take a break, I want to ask you about China, because I know that there's been this ongoing concern, quote unquote, about China. And of course, year to date, China's, you know, its index to the Shanghai index is still off 3.5% or so. You mentioned the wage growth in China. Can you give any examples of what you're seeing that is points to what is causing China to slow down? I mean, it's not United States causing that, is it? Or is it something else in play?
Well, it's partially the developed world, and I would say both the U.S., you know, obviously the U.S. has gone through a slowdown, but maybe even more so Europe. Europe is really struggling. Europe is just at the very beginning of emerging from their deepest recession since World War II.
Okay.
And so clearly exporting to the major developed markets, the U.S. and Europe, that certainly weighs on growth in China. The other thing that holds China back a little bit is that they effectively need to transition from an export economy to more of a domestic consumption-led economy. And that transition has to be managed. It's not easy to do. And so as a result, in many ways, the government in China is actually slowing kind of by design. They do have what they refer to as stall speed. They don't want growth lower than 7%, but they're targeting growth at about 7.5%, and they think that that's enough to keep the economy sort of moving in the right direction and aid this transition from export and infrastructure to actually domestic consumers, the Chinese buying their own goods and services. That is a long-term transition. That's not going to happen overnight, and as that naturally happens, their growth rate is going to slow a bit.
Well, I would settle for a 7% growth rate for the U.S. economy.
Most places in the world would.
Just joining us, David Lafferty's on my line here. He's our guest, and the website for today's program is Durable Portfolio. We're going to grab a quick break, David. We'll be right back. Stay right there.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we're back with David Lafferty. He is a chartered financial analyst. He is with Natixis Global Asset Management. He's Senior Vice President and Chief Market Strategist. Really smart guy. You can tell that already. And the website is durableportfolio.com. We're talking about kind of getting an assessment and David's perspective on the markets and what's been happening. We were talking about U.S. and, of course, China. And, you know, the other, you know, big elephant in the room, David, of course, that we can't have a conversation about some of these things without at least a passing comment or two about the Fed's tapering. You know, what are we at now? Is it $45 billion a month they're buying?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, split between treasuries and mortgages.
Okay. And that basically is, what does that end up being? About $500 million a year? Whew. Still a big number.
Yeah, still a big number. I think it's important that the Fed has gone out of its way to tell the markets that tapering or reducing the amount of the often referred to as money printing. They're essentially pushing money into the banks by buying treasuries and mortgages from the banks. That pushes money into the banks that hopefully they'll lend out.
Right.
That is a big number. The Fed has gone out of its way to tell people that that isn't necessarily tighter monetary policy as they begin to lower the amount of money that they're pushing at the banks. So I think the market is a bit worried. It's interesting to note that the stock market's certainly a lot higher since all this talk of tapering has begun, and interest rates aren't that much higher. So there hasn't been, I think the Fed has done a pretty good job of messaging this. They are definitely trying to thread the needle. They are trying to take away monetary stimulus without any adverse reactions from the market. We had a little bit of a spike in interest rates last summer when this first came up. The 10-year Treasury went from 160 to about 3% over four and a half months. So, you know, really scared a lot of folks' bond portfolios, took some short-term losses.
Sure.
But interest rates have come back down. So far, the messaging around tapering appears to be working. The market had bouts of volatility, but it certainly hasn't fallen out of bed as they begin to pull back on the stimulus a little bit.
Let me ask you this, David. With the, you mentioned the 10-year treasuries. As we see the potential for rates to go up, and I think most people, you know, as you've shared, you know, at some point the rates will start to rise, especially as they continue to, my theory is as the Fed continues to pull back on the amount of treasuries they're buying, obviously somebody else will, unless our budget deficit, annual budget deficit for the country, unless that very quickly shrinks kind of in pace with the reduction in the debt buying by the Fed, that there will have to be somebody else that buys, and somebody else is going to want a higher rate than what the Fed is willing to accept. So my point is that those rates should go up, and you know that there's been this compression down in the 2.4, 2.45 for the 10-year treasuries. I think going to be a lot of people surprised with their bond portfolios if they've just got way too much in medium to longer term bonds.
Yeah, it's a great point. So I think you hit on a key issue, which is that it's important for investors to remember that the Fed is not a financial buyer. They don't care the price that they're paying. However, when the Fed begins to pull back, other investors have to take up that slack, and those other investors do care what their yield is when they buy those bonds. And so to bring those investors into the market, in theory, interest rates should begin to back up because investors will require a greater yield to actually buy these securities. Ironically, that hasn't happened yet, and it relates back to a little bit of what I said before the break about Europe really struggling.
Yeah.
We have a very important European Central Bank meeting later this week where they may announce a very similar program, something like quantitative easing. They're talking about lowering their interest rates, and so a lot of investors globally appear to be fleeing Europe and buying U.S. treasuries, and that is driving the price up and the yield down. So while the natural reaction to the Fed pulling back should be that rates are rising, there's another player in this, and that's, you know, other global investors have stepped in, at least in the short term, to pick up that demand. So the result that we've seen in portfolios is a bit counterintuitive at this point.
It is, and so I guess my question on that one, David, is that good for us? I guess that's good, right? I mean, the Fed's getting out as they should, and rates are not jumping. And I guess it depends on whether you're a saver or a lender, right?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, for most clients' portfolios, what they really want in the long term, we want interest rates to be higher. We all want to make more yield. We want to collect more income, particularly if we're, you know, retirees or approaching retirement. So in the long run, we should all want interest rates to go up. The problem is, as most investors know, when interest rates go up, well, you get more income, you also run the risk of principal losses. So how do you navigate that in your portfolio? And one of the things, as these other buyers step in, one of the good parts about that is, well, we want higher interest rates in the long run. We want that transition to higher interest rates to be smooth and gradual. That probably won't happen, but anything we can do that makes it smoother than it would otherwise be, we would prefer that. If interest rates are going to go up, say 1% during the course of the year, we'd like it to be a little bit each month. We don't want 1% in 1 month, you know, because that's really going to cause some losses in our bond portfolio.
That'd be a real shock.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting and ironic that the European Central Bank's movements and some of these changes, or the fleeing, as you described it, David, to coming to America, you know, that those dollars might ironically ease our transition into, or at least maybe dampen the volatility, or maybe make it a little bit of a gentler ride of interest rates rising as we continue to see this pullback. And I, of course, I'm very hopeful that the deficit, which the annual deficit, if you've been tracking this, has been going down largely in part to increase tax revenues, not because they've necessarily reduced spending in Washington. So, you know, hopefully that'll, you know, kind of be a soft landing, if you will.
Yeah, there's a limited amount of time. There's sort of a window for this. If you look at all the budget projections, again, we have higher tax rates. Growth has been increasing, so that's driving tax revenues have been going up considerably. To your point, it really hasn't been due to spending cuts. But that window's fairly narrow. It only lasts for a few more years. And when the baby boomers really kick in between Social Security and Medicare, the deficit's going to widen out again without real structural reforms.
Okay.
And so that's just another reason why investors should be cautious about interest rate risk, because again, as those deficits begin to increase, what that really means is the difference has to be covered by issuing bonds, which means lots of bonds coming to market. You know, bond guys like me would refer to that as an increase in supply. And obviously when supply goes up, then to bring demand in for that, the yield is going to have to go up. And so that the long-term outlook for the budget deficit is another reason why we think in the long run the trend in interest rates is going to be up. We may not know the exact path, but we definitely think the long-term direction is north.
Very good, David. David Lafferty is our guest today. Quick break. We'll be right back.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we are back with David Lafferty, who has been our guest today, and the website, durableportfolio.com. David, I just got a minute left. So speak to this low volatility that we've seen with the markets, and you know that may be indicative of some investor complacency. What's your take on that? Is that a warning sign?
I don't think it's a warning sign. Certainly, when we talk about, I think there's a couple of things going on. When you talk about low volatility, it could mean implied volatility, what the options market is pricing in. And it really tells you that the market is not worried about a major sell-off at this point. And again, the underlying fundamentals of the stock market are pretty solid. So it isn't surprising that volatility in the options market is pricing very low. If you look at general volatility in the stock market, what we would call realized volatility, that's how much your portfolios are bouncing up and down every day, that also has been fairly low, and I think that's a byproduct of what I mentioned earlier. You're not going to see these large swings, hopefully not up or down at this point. We'd love if they were up. We don't think we're going to have a major sell-off because earnings and fundamentals are solid. But again, we don't envision a huge jump in equity prices either, simply because they're not cheap anymore. Stocks, broadly speaking, aren't cheap. So I think the market has kind of compressed these returns, and that's showing up as fairly low volatility in the market.
Very good, David. We're out of time. David Lafferty, Chartered Financial Analyst, Senior Vice President and Chief Market Strategist, Natixis Global Asset Management, DurablePortfolio.com is the website. David, we'll have to have you come back. Great program. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having me, David.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.